number six, please. Dietemeyer versus Joanne Barnett, Barnhart.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Eva Guerra, and I represent the plaintiff in this case. May it please the court and counsel. I represent Jack Dietemeyer, who is 54 years old currently, and he was last insured for Social Security in December of 2002. A decision was rendered by an ALJ in this case, which did not follow the dictates of this court in Clifford v. Apfel, which is that there should be a logical bridge built between the evidence and the ALJ's conclusions when a finding of disability is made. In this case, the ALJ basically made his own judgments, which is prohibited under Clifford. He made himself the doctor, and his judgments were the final deciding factor. There are three doctors in this case. Two of them were long-term treating physicians, and one was a vocational PhD expert who did an evaluation of Mr. Dietemeyer's prior work and his current disability based on his doctor's reporting. And the ALJ rejected all three. There was a consulting examination by a DDS physician. The DDS physician did not give any residual functional capacity.
What physician?
Disability Determination Services consulting examination by Dr. Grady. Am I not clear?
Well, some of these acronyms may be known to people in the field, but not necessarily known to the rest of us.
I apologize. The state agency referred Mr. Dietemeyer for a consultative one-time examination with Dr. Grady. Dr. Grady basically examined the claimant, but did
what
not.
What kind of a doctor is he? His specialty?
I don't believe. I was trying to look,
then
and
he's
I.
He's not a DDS.
No. He's an MD.
That would make him a dentist.
But I'm no. He's an MD.
One reason
I'm,
why this acronym was jarring.
I apologize. I'm not sure if he had a specialty, but Mr. Dietemeyer did have an orthopedic specialist who made an opinion of his own, but. What Dr. Grady's report fails to report, and actually Dr. Grady makes a point of saying there were no prior injuries, when in fact Mr. Dietemeyer in 1967 was in a major automobile accident and suffered a shattered femur. After that accident, he went to work and worked consistently for 26 years for the Dana Corporation in a job that was primarily standing, or what they call in Social Security light in nature, standing 6 out of 8 hours of the day and lifting frequently up to 20 pounds. Mr. Dietemeyer worked despite his medical problems. He had a shortened leg. He worked for 26 years until he could no longer work because he had osteoarthritis of the hip. His doctors recognized it. His doctors consistently put in all of their reports that he should not do prolonged standing. Yet the ALJ concludes in his findings, that Mr. Dietemeyer could be on his feet 6 out of 8 hours a day with some minor restrictions, no twisting, et cetera, and basically finds him capable of doing light work, but concludes that he couldn't do his prior work, which was essentially exactly that, light work. What the ALJ also concludes is directly contrary to law. He says that because the claimant can do some light work, it implies that he can do sedentary work. Well, in this case, if Mr. Dietemeyer is found to be capable of sedentary work, he can take the vocational rules, as they call them, the grids, and 2.201.14 would find that he is disabled at his age.
Why did they say they wouldn't use the grid?
Why did the ALJ say he didn't use the grid?
What's the basis for not using the grid?
Well, the hypothetical question that the ALJ posed to the VE did not include a restriction on prolonged standing or walking. And so because the VE said there were jobs that a person could do without that restriction, I believe that the ALJ went to the grids. Didn't go to the grids. However, when the VE was asked by the claimant's non-attorney representative at the time, if he had to consider the restrictions put on the claimant by his own treating physicians, not only his family doctor, but the orthopedist, the VE testified that there would be no jobs that this person could perform in the national economy, period. Not only sedentary, but no jobs. But just taking the ALJ's conclusion that because this claimant could do sedentary work, he is not disabled, that's just false, because he has to consider the grids when you're given an individual who's between 50 and 54, closely approaching advanced age, who does not have any transferable skills to other occupations, which the ALJ admits in his findings that there are no transferable skills. He should have, by law, just found him disabled. The other mistake that the ALJ makes is the credibility determination. Both the regulations and Social Security ruling 97.6 or 97-6 outlines the factors that the ALJ must consider when looking at credibility. The ALJ only considered one factor, which is considered a quote, other factor, and that is that Mr. Dienemeyer did not have side effects from medication. The reason he cites that as his only reason is because Mr. Dienemeyer had nothing in his testimony or in the record which would suggest that he did anything other than have a sedentary lifestyle. So the ALJ couldn't point to activities, he couldn't point to anything in the record that would have shed any light on the client having a lack of credibility. So because Mr. Dienemeyer didn't testify that he had side effects, he basically said, you know what, he's not credible. And he also said that Mr. Dietemeyer's functional capacity as described by him are not consistent with the record. Well, the record is replete with the doctors opining that Mr. Dietemeyer could not stand. When he stood for any prolonged periods, he couldn't maintain it. He was going to go back to work in 98. Found that he could only stand 2.5 hours out of an 8-hour day, and basically would have gone back to work had he been able to sustain that with his severe disability involving his osteoarthritis. Thank you.
May it please the Court, good morning. My name is Shea Bond, I'm Assistant Regional Counsel for the Social Security Administration, and I represent the Commissioner of Social Security in this matter. The question before this Court is whether substantial evidence supports...
We can't hear you, please.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I'll speak up.
We'll let Mike down with you, please.
The question before this Court is whether substantial evidence supports the ALJ's determination, which stands as the Commissioner's final decision, that Mr. Dietemeyer was not disabled under the Social Security Act and was not entitled to benefits. Because the ALJ's decision is supported by substantial evidence, we would request that this Court uphold the District Court's judgment affirming the ALJ's decision. Mr. Dietemeyer's main challenge to the ALJ's decision is that the RFC finding did not accommodate his inability to stand and walk for prolonged periods of time. And counsel just stated that in doing so, the ALJ rejected the treating physician's opinions, and that's simply not true. What the treating doctors documented in their treatment findings and notes was that Mr. Dietemeyer could not engage in prolonged standing and walking, and these were based on statements that Mr. Dietemeyer himself made to his treating physicians. They did not find that Mr. Dietemeyer could not do any standing and walking. It was just prolonged standing and walking that he could not perform. And the ALJ accommodated this limitation in the RFC finding by allowing him to perform a range of light work, which allowed him to alternate his position every 30 to 45 minutes. And a review of the treatment notes demonstrates that Mr. Dietemeyer himself had reported to his treating physician that he could walk anywhere from 45 minutes up to 2.5 hours of time before symptoms would appear and become aggravated. So the ALJ's RFC finding well within the limitations that Mr. Dietemeyer himself described to his physicians. I'd also like to point out that while counsel claims that Mr. Dietemeyer's past work was at the light level, the vocational expert at the administrative hearing had classified Mr. Dietemeyer's past factory work as medium. So, his past work is not light. It was medium, and the RFC finding was with, for light work.
When the vocational expert testifies as to regional jobs available, for example, 6,000 unskilled ticket seller position.
Yes. I'm sorry, what's the question?
It sounds a little strange to me. I don't know where 6,000 unskilled ticket seller position would be available. What's the regional? What is a regional grouping for this?
The region was defined as the area surrounding Richmond, Indiana, Cincinnati, Ohio, and I think Springfield, Ohio. And the vocational expert said that the total amount of jobs in that area, I believe, was 1.4 million. And the expert, based on the hypothetical question that was presented to him, then identified the numbers of jobs that Mr. Dietermeyer could perform within the limitations provided.
Was it true that when this non-attorney advocate asked a hypothetical, including 20 minutes of rest, an hour, he said no, there's no jobs available?
That is correct. The vocational expert did testify that those limitations did apply and were accurate, that Mr. Dietermeyer would not be able to perform any jobs in the economy. However, the ALJ reasonably discounted that limitation because it was not supported by the objective findings. That limitation came from a questionnaire that was filled out by Dr. Pearson, who had treated Mr. Dietermeyer. When you look at the objective findings that Mr. Pearson based his opinion on, they do not demonstrate that limitation is appropriate. The ALJ discussed that the objective findings showed for his test results he had normal findings. At most it showed that he had minor degenerative changes in his hip and lower spine. His doctors had diagnosed Mr. Dietermeyer with only earlier osteoarthritis, which did not require any sort of aggressive treatment. Also, Dr. Pearson's contemporaneous treatment notes did not include any sort of limitations regarding excessive rest periods or the need to rest 20 minutes out of every hour, which is quite limiting. Another factor is that the questionnaire itself contained inconsistent answers. While at one point Dr. Pearson says that Mr. Dietermeyer needs 20 minutes out of every hour to rest, he also described Mr. Dietermeyer's symptoms, his pain, as only moderate. And he had been given a selection of choices in which to describe Mr. Dietermeyer's pain, range from mild, moderate, moderately severe to severe. And he chose moderate, which is doesn't seem to correlate with his finding that Mr. Dietermeyer would be basically unable to perform any work activity for one-third of the day. So the fact that the vocational expert had said that no jobs accommodated that the need to rest for 20 minutes, the ALJ reasonably did not accept that limitation and did not accept the testimony associated with that limitation. I'd like to point out that the ALJ did consider more than just one factor when he assessed credibility. He looked at the claimant's daily activities. He looked at the date Mr. Dietermeyer's medications, the fact that he was only using conservative treatment methods. And he also considered the factor that Mr. Dietermeyer had said that he alleviated his hip pain and back pain by avoiding prolonged standing and walking, and that is the very limitation that was included in the hypothetical question and presented to the vocational expert. The vocational expert testified that based on the RFC found by the ALJ, that 150,000 light jobs accommodated his limitations. The ALJ found that that was a significant number, and therefore that Mr. Dietermeyer was not disabled. For those reasons, we ask that because the ALJ's decision is supported by substantial evidence, that this court affirm the district court's judgment affirming that decision. And if there are no more questions, thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you. Just a few points. First of all, the restrictions that were given by the doctors, two doctors, family doctor, orthopedist. One, the family doctor said, needs to be in a position where he did not have to stand and bear weight. The biggest problem for Jack at the present time is prolonged periods of standing. The orthopedist said, requires one 20-minute rest period per hour and needs to lie down and rest for a substantial period of time during the day for relief of pain and or fatigue. Now, U.S. attorney, the assistant attorney, indicates that this is not in the regular treatment notes. Most doctors don't put RFCs in their treatment notes. They basically put treatment notes, and when asked to make an opinion regarding someone's residual functional capacity, they'll do so based on their long-term observation and treatment of that patient. These doctors have been with Mr. Dietemeyer for a long time. They know what his problems are. While everyone is indicating, or opposing counsel indicates that it's early osteoarthritis, the attempt that these doctors are, what these doctors are attempting to do is to avoid a hip replacement in the future prematurely if the osteoarthritis continues to take away the cartilage between the bones. The only way that that's not going to happen is if he can do a sedentary job or not be on his feet. That's the only issue here. Does he have to be on his feet, or can he do work off his feet? If sedentary is the only kind of work he could do, the grids indicate that he is to be found disabled. The other thing is the ALJ didn't accept anyone's findings, but there's nothing contradictory in the record to the treating physicians. And the ALJ should not have come to his own conclusions. He's not a medical doctor, and I believe the case law, as I indicated at the beginning, Clifford v. Apfel, indicates that he is not to be the judge and doctor. He is to take the doctor's opinions unless there is something in the record to contradict those opinions, and there is nothing in the record to contradict that. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. We'll proceed to case number